Jess, it's happening.
Whoa, Tina, what are you doing in my car?
Space is here now. No closet will be left behind.
Did you say closet?
Yes, the Container Store custom closets are up to 25% off. It doesn't matter the size or shape. Space is coming to them all.
You're not serious.
Space isn't a joke, Jess.
How long do we have?
Through October 13th.
All right, buckle up.
The Container Store custom closet sale is here with up to 25% off all systems, including Alpha. The Container Store, where space comes from.
And now for an inside look at college sports with the men in the know, JC and Morgan. Here's Mike Morgan and JC Sherbert.
Hello, 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 and another beautiful, beautiful winter day. Well, maybe not as much. It's probably raining and chilly wherever you are in the Southeast. That's the case in Atlanta. That's the case in many parts of the South. Hey, it was great while it lasted as we fast forward from summer to dog days of winter. Mike Morgan, JC Sherbert. It's the JC and Morgan podcast. Each and every week, an hour's worth, sometimes a little bit more, of college football discussion. We welcome all of you each and every week to tune in, no matter what you're doing, working out, in traffic, hiding, moonlighting from the boss, whatever it might be. He is JC Sherbert of 24/7 Sports. You can catch him on Twitter at JC Sherbert. I am Mike Morgan of ESPN on the SEC Network at Morgan on Air. JC, how are you, sir?
I'm doing good, Mike. It seems like it's been raining here in Atlanta for 40 days and 40 nights, so I'm about to build an ark. Listen to the Dave Matthews song Two Step, where they talk about climbing on two by two, a biblical reference there. But certainly the cold is fine. I like winter weather. I like, I like it better than the heat. But the rain is killing me, and it's killing drivers in Atlanta, not literally, but in terms of, you know, could most of the drivers in Atlanta pass the DMV driving test and get their license when it's raining? No, that's just not the case. So spent a lot of time on the roads the last couple of days, and I just want to put a little PSA out there. Be safe. Just because it's raining doesn't mean you forgot how to drive. Just use some common sense, folks here in the ATL. It's bad enough as it is, but it gets 10 times worse when it's raining. So hopefully this rain lets up pretty soon, and we can have a nice weekend with at least no precipitation.
I'm all for that. I think it's supposed to clear up in many parts of the Southeast, at least, weather-wise. So while the matchups might not be great on the field, which is well-documented this week in college football, at least there'll be good weather, good tailgating weather for a lot of you folks out there. We'll get to the future in a second, and I want to get to the present very soon, because there's a lot going on. The new playoff rankings are out, and they're about as intriguing, as a movie featuring The Rock. I mean, you pretty much know what you're getting when you walk into a movie theater and Rock is starring. It's going to be a lot of weapons and special effects and monosyllabic expressions that you can put on a T-shirt, and not much of a plot. So, that being said, what led into a very anticlimactic playoff rankings was a very anticlimactic week of games. All the top 10 teams won. It wasn't a great slate of games to begin with. Oklahoma State, I got to see a lot of that game. That was the most exciting. But again, nobody plays defense in the Big 12, so I don't know what to make of that. I do have an issue with Mike Gundy. I know it, and the announcers are saying this, I know it's always cool to say, I love it when a coach goes for two. He's playing to win games. I didn't think that made a whole lot of sense, to be honest with you. You had like a minute left on the clock. Even if you get it, there's a good chance, since nobody plays defense in that league, that Oklahoma's going to march right down the field and kick a field goal. So why do a make or break situation when you can just hit the extra point, play for overtime? Anyway, that's just me talking a little strategy, because there wasn't much strategy to talk, JC, in these games. They were lopsided. They were disappointing. Auburn, Georgia is always a fun game for me. I love the pageantry of that game. I love the history of that game. I love the fact that they used to play it in Piedmont Park in Atlanta, in Columbus, Georgia. These are places I've been, and I look at those particular venues and I say, they used to play a big time SEC football game here. It's always a cool deal. But at the end of the day, Georgia just overmatched Auburn, which I think a lot of us saw coming. So you had big eyes on Florida, South Carolina. That was an interesting game. And I'll just tell you a quick story before I let you kind of harp on that and the other ones. I was flying back from Kentucky at a basketball game in Kentucky. I get on the plane and South Carolina is up 17 late third quarter. And I'm thinking, well, this one's in the books. Again, you know what Florida is on offense. Felipe Franks is not an SEC passer. Florida's very predictable. The only way they can win the game is just run all over you. And with a 17-point lead and 18 minutes to go, you figure that's not going to work. And Jake Bentley was looking. I mean, he was looking like the Jake Bentley of a couple of years ago, where we thought by now we could be talking about first-team All-SEC Jake Bentley. He was looking sharp. I get off the plane, and I check scores, and I just kept looking at it, and I said, well, there's no way that's accurate. Florida could not have won that game. It just didn't compute. And then I finally went back and watched the tape because I've got South Carolina this weekend, and sure enough, it was accurate. So that was the most kind of improbable comeback of the week. I know you had some eyes on that game. What about that, and what about the rest of the week stood out to you?
Well, I'll start with South Carolina and Florida. First and foremost, I do another podcast. I should do two more podcasts, but another one our audience could listen to, unless you're a Gamecock fan, which that's the third one, is the POS show, the Politics or Sports show. We do that twice a week. If you like politics and sports at the same time, in other words, if you like water cooler talk, I would encourage you to subscribe to that on iTunes and check that out. But the point of that is not to promote that podcast necessarily, but to say that we give a true champion every week, you know, and that could be from the political realm or the sports realm. And mine was Felipe Franks. And I'll tell you this, Mike, I agree with you that the kid struggles in the passing game. I'll agree with you that, you know, he is not the ideal quarterback for any SEC team. But he played with a lot of guts, and he had to shush his own crowd. And when they figured out South Carolina couldn't stop him, you know, he ran the ball just as much as their very talented stable of backs did. Jordan Scarlett ran like a man. But, you know, one of the key plays on the winning drive, Florida got cute once. They tried a double pass. They put Kadarius Toney in the shotgun. They snapped it to him. He threw a lateral to Franks. J.C. Horn, South Carolina's freshman corner, had him dead to center. I mean, Reddit was up on him. And then Franks broke the tackle and ran around the other end for about 6-7 yards. And that's kind of what sort of inspired blue-collar type performance he had in that football game. And I think hats off to the kid because he looked like he was going to lose his job. And then Tress gets injured, so they have to go with him. There's talk about Emory Jones. The crowd in the first quarter is booing him because he can't complete a pass. Well, he didn't need to complete a pass. He played a very good ball game and helped Florida win that football game. As for South Carolina, it's a tough loss for Gamecock fans because now the record with Will Muschamp at South Carolina against ranked opponents is 1-10. Now, you know, five of those losses have come to Clemson and Georgia. And, you know, A&M is one of them from this year. Kentucky is one of them from this year. And then three of them happened his first season, which was essentially a year zero, and they did knock off a ranked Tennessee team. You look at the Gamecocks program, and one of the things that helped Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier, even though their records were very similar in their early years to Will Muschamp. In fact, Will Muschamp beats Chattanooga this weekend. He ties Spurrier for the record as the most wins in the first 3 years of a tenure at South Carolina. And he'll probably break it because they do have Akron left on the schedule. Number two, he clinches bowl eligibility, and he'd be the first coach in program history, including Spurrier, to take the Gamecocks to a bowl in his first 3 years. But the standards have changed for that program. And one of the things Holtz and Spurrier did at South Carolina was, you know, Holtz in year two played a fifth-ranked Georgia team at home. Week two, they had just snapped a 21-game losing streak. Quincy Carter throws five interceptions. Gamecocks win 21-10 and tear down the goalpost. Steve Spurrier, in his second year, went up to Clemson and won, which is important. And in 07, went down to Georgia and beat a Georgia team that ended up being a contender nationally when all was said and done, finished 10-2 in Athens the second week of the season. He also snapped a long losing streak against Tennessee and a ofer against Florida and Urban Meyer in his first year. Gamecocks had never beaten Florida as a member of the SEC before 2005. So those wins bought some credibility. Not a Dave Odom war chest of credibility, real credibility, okay? And Muschamp just hasn't had those wins. And you know, Saturday was a golden opportunity. I thought Florida was overranked at 15. I still think they're overranked. But honestly, there's not an ant's butt bit of difference between 12 and 25 in the poll, in my opinion. It's just
or 12 just, and 35 yeah, for that matter.
Just throw it at a dartboard. You know, shake it up and draw them out of a hat. And, you know, you look at South Carolina. Let me give you some stats on Will Muschamp as a head coach. This is at Florida and at South Carolina. After the loss, 34-7 when leading at halftime, 12-3 at South Carolina. 37-5 when leading after the third quarter, 14-2 at South Carolina. When scoring 30-plus points in his coaching career, 29-2 overall, and 12-2, yes, at South Carolina, including 4-1 this season. So it was a very atypical loss. Say what you want about Will Muschamp. I mean, this guy, he's also 13-5 in his career at South Carolina in one-score games. So it was a one-score game. He led at halftime. He led after the third quarter. And his team scored more than 30 points. You'd take those odds any day of the week with him on the sidelines. And I think that the offense kind of went dead. I think running the ball, and you know, they didn't actually call runs. They were RPOs, and Grantham adjusted his defense very nicely to kind of stop it. And Gamecocks just didn't adjust offensively, so they ended up running the ball against what should have been a favorable run box, 7 out of the last 10 plays. And they just didn't go anywhere. And then the defense, which honestly, Mike, you know, they're starting guys that, you know, weren't even in the two deep at the beginning of the year in that secondary. They have five safeties injured right now, and those were probably the top five. And you know, their defensive line doesn't have much depth. It's been a disappointing year at least one of the linebacker spots. You know, so that defense, and then on top of all that, South Carolina's not getting the turnovers that they got last year at all. So, you know, it was going to be a long day on defense. I felt like the Gamecocks had to win that game offensively. Did they do enough for three quarters and some change? Yes. But I think I would have stayed aggressive. And the problem with it is the failure to make adjustments and get out of the RPO game and say, hey, maybe, you know, they're adjusting to this. Let's do a screen or something like that. You know, the failure to do that and the fact that fans don't really know, I mean, you're not supposed to know when you call an RPO. You can't tell that from the stands. I think the fact fans didn't know that, they just thought Muschamp was trying to run out of the clock. And what was kind of wrong about that is Gamecocks were snapping it with 22 seconds to go on the play clock. They were just running it because that's what the call is. So, lots of issues there. I know Muschamp took some heat. I think a lot of fans were frustrated. I think anytime you lose a game like this, and I'll remind people that Steve Spurrier had an Independence Bowl against Missouri and Brad Smith where they were killing them 28-7. I was at that game. And they came back, left the middle of the field wide open on defense the whole day. Missouri ended up winning in Spurrier's first year. You know, we remember the 31-3 lead the Gators had at Doak Campbell one year, the choke at Doak, and that's back when there were ties, and FSU comes back and ties the game. So good coaches, even good coaches, lose games like that. And it's heart-wrenching. And like I said, it's atypical of Will Muschamp. You know, Georgia and Auburn played out about like I thought it would. Auburn's got issues on offense. I did a TV segment last night down in your old neck of the woods, Columbus, Georgia.
Yeah.
Where I basically said some of the same things about Gus Malzahn that we've said on this podcast. And you can check that segment out on my Facebook page, Sherb Nation. God, I'm just full of promos today.
Plug away, my man.
You know, I mean, it played out about like I thought it would. And the Iron Bowl in a couple of weeks, you know, it's really, really difficult to say that that's an important game for an opposing coach against Alabama with how they're rolling this year. You know, maybe Tua doesn't play and their injuries aren't good and Auburn's got a pretty good defense and maybe they go in there and play them tough. But, you know, I know there's been a lot of public chatter about Malzahn staying, and I think the consensus is that 2019 is a huge year for him. But, you know, anything can happen because, as I said last night, it's Auburn. And the third thing, Oklahoma State. I do understand the aggressiveness of Mike Gundy. You're right. They don't play defense in the Big 12. There's nothing that says Oklahoma wouldn't have marched down the field and won the game and broke their hearts with no time on the clock. But his kicker was highly erratic in that football game. I think you got to have faith he's going to hit the extra point. But, you know, at that point, hell, why not do it? Why not just go for it? I mean, it's Bedlam. I think that going into that game, Oklahoma State played Oklahoma better than anyone thought they would. Why not just go for it and have your varsity blues type moment right there?
Because Bud Kilmer's not walking through that door. That's why Bud Kilmer's not walking through that door. Illegally shooting up players' knees when they shouldn't be and holding kids' transcripts and trying to blackball them from getting into an Ivy League school for a scholarship. Okay, that's enough varsity blues. How about that whipped cream bikini, though? I understand your point on that. I will say this on the extra point, the kicker, and by no means will he be mistaken for Morton Anderson anytime soon, but the holder was pulling a Ray Finkel on him. He was doing the laces in. The laces have to be out. Don't they know that destroyed the life of Ray Finkel? Anyway, you mentioned hit a winning scorer as time expires and breaks there. It's the Big 12. They probably would have done it with another 30 seconds left on the clock. I get it, and I love going for, you know, from a fan standpoint, it's great. Go for it. Nobody wants to see an extra point. To me, Oklahoma State's best chance, I'm just trying to think like an amateur coach there, is to hit that extra point and go into overtime and hope you're going to go in overtime and then try and win it there. But anytime you go for two, remember now, the odds are always less than 50%. Okay, they're always less. You can dial up the best play you have in your bag of tricks. And granted, the receiver was open. Holy smoke, that throw was terrible. Mason Rudolph makes that throw. But Mason Rudolph's in the NFL, and the young man playing quarterback in Stillwater right now is not. So anyway, let me piggyback on a couple of the other games you mentioned. One more thing on the South Carolina Florida game. That game. And I agree with everything you said. And Will Muschamp is going to be digging himself out of a hole because a lot of people there are just going to be they think they should have gotten some other coach. I don't know who they think they should have gotten. I don't know who they think they were going to get.
Let me add this. Here's how this went down, and you know this too. Tom Herman was the number one candidate
Correct.
For the job, and rightfully so. And I think Tom's doing some good things at Texas. And there's nothing that says he wouldn't have left South Carolina after a year to go to Texas either. I mean, he could have pulled Todd Graham and
right.
You know, because that Texas obviously is an infinitely better job than South Carolina, even though they struggled. And, hey, you avoided the Zach Smith Twitter rant. If he was the coach at South Carolina, he got pulled into that crap. And then Kirby Smart was taking the job. And then Georgia opened. And right. they gave it to, you know, and look, Kirby's done a good job. I tend to think that Kirby's results at South Carolina would have probably mirrored Will Muschamp's to this point. I think Kirby, you know, instead of inheriting an old Camaro, you got to kind of fix up and soup up. He kind of inherited a Mercedes with, you know, that just needed a tune-up to get it
an oil change.
Yeah, an oil change.
It's apples and oranges what those two guys inherited.
There's no doubt about it. And you know, Kirby did the right thing by taking that job, not only because it's a great job, but that's his alma mater.
Sure.
He's a Georgia Bulldog, Mike. Kirby Smart. Sure. Georgia Bulldog. So, you know, then it got down to Will Muschamp. Well, let me tell you the other names that were floating around out there. Lincoln Riley was one, and this is a point of angst and consternation with a few Gamecock fans. You know, you hire Lincoln Riley, it's an out-of-the-box type of deal, but it's a big gamble, I think, because of his style of play. I think he would have been the guy to replace Stoops at Oklahoma and left South Carolina? No, I think he'd have probably still been there. You don't know that he has – you know, the recruiting ties to, you know, to get there. I mean, I think it would have taken Lincoln Riley a lot longer to get even to bowl eligibility than Will Muschamp. But, you know, those are apples to oranges types of coaches. And so there's no telling. I do think he'd have put a lot of points on the board at some point. So that's kind of the guy that everybody looks at that's never has accepted the Muschamp hire. Like, oh, he could have had Lincoln Riley. Okay. Well, here are the other guys. Willie Taggart, Greg Schiano, Rich Rodriguez, and Troy Calhoun from Air Force.
Yeah,
good coach, even, but yeah.
You know. Right.
I mean, Will Muschamp. I mean, because if you're not going to, you know, I don't think South Carolina could afford to take a big gamble and go with a Lincoln Riley. I mean, and Lincoln Riley inherited a Mercedes, too. There's no doubt about it with how he coaches and his style of play. You know, Oklahoma is suited for what he likes to do, and he's a Texas guy, and he's home. So it worked out well for him. Again, he probably wouldn't have had the type of success at South Carolina that even Muschamp had. So what you do is you get a guy that's hungry. You get a guy that knows what he's doing, a guy that was offered the Texas and Florida job both before he ever coached a college game. He had a toxic situation at Florida that he couldn't dig out of thanks to an unfortunate injury-riddled 2013 and mistakes in hiring an offensive coordinator, and he'd tell you that. You have a roster that a former coach in the SEC told me had maybe 20 SEC-level players on it when Muschamp got there. Okay, and this is not coming from the Muschamp staff. This is coming from other staff that would know. Okay, and you know, so what do you do if you're the Gamecocks athletic director, Ray Tanner? You need a guy that can go recruit, restock the roster, and get you to respectability, because your arch rival just played for the national championship, and you've got a new guy coming in at your border rival. And, you know, at the time, Larry Fedora just won a division at North Carolina. So you're kind of encircled by excellence. And you're sitting there at 3-9, you know, and if you interview Will Muschamp and you talk to him for any stretch of time, you know this guy knows a lot. And maybe the situation at Florida wasn't all 100% on him. And so I think that's why it was a good hire. But, you know, you could have had Willie Taggart.
Well, your point is well taken in that what the Marcus Tom Herman knew he was getting the Texas job. He wasn't taking the South Carolina job. And the moment that Georgia came open, Kirby Smart was as good as gone. And I've been in a room with Kirby Smart and Will Muschamp when he was at Florida and sat there for an hour and talked to him and just in discussions for getting ready to broadcast those games. And I can tell you, when you sit back and you listen to them and you talk to them and you look at their level of preparation, they're almost facsimiles of one another. Forget the fact that they were both defensive backs at the same school at Georgia and almost took an identical path. If you look at their coaching lineage, how they got those jobs, it's eerily similar. Muschamp's track to where he is, Kirby's track to where he is, eerily similar what they did to get to those quote-unquote premier jobs. You put Kirby Smart at South Carolina and you put Will Muschamp at Georgia, and I'm not sure if there's that big a difference in the results. But here's what South Carolina fans have to realize. You're not Georgia right now. You're just not. And the Steve Spurrier hire might go down as the greatest hire in Gamecock football history. That was under an old AD by the name of Mike McGee, who was always obsessed with names of older coaches. He was not a big, especially after the Brad Scott flop, he was not a big believer in getting the young up-and-comer. He was a big believer in getting an established name. And I make the analogy, it's kind of like a really good scotch when you hire a Lou Holtz or a Steve Spurrier. But when you're getting them where they are, it's like it's had a lot of ice in it that's been watered down a bit. So you're not getting Lou at his best. You didn't get Steve at his best, even though you got great results, all things being equal. But it never ends well. It never ends. When you've got a coach at the end of the line, it never ends well. And it certainly did not end well with Steve Spurrier at South Carolina, to the point where whoever took that job was going to be taking over a situation that was depleted of SEC talent at a number of positions. And that's not a one-year rebuild. That is a three-year reclamation project. That's what that job was, and anybody who interviewed for it was aware of that. That's what happens when you have it's nice for a while. It gives you it gives you some historic runs, but it hardly ever ends well. Look at Bobby Bowden at Florida State. It was a nightmare when that thing ended. It just comes with the territory. And I'll say this too, and this is not to rain on the parade, because look, it's three straight 11 win seasons or three straight 11 win seasons. But the Eastern Division, which I'm proud to say is finally getting back. The Eastern Division, you could actually make the argument, is deeper than the West. I'm not saying it is, but you can at least have a discussion. You couldn't even – you get laughed out of the room if you said that over the last 5 years. The West has been the varsity. The East has been the JV. Florida has made strides up. Tennessee's probably going to get to a bowl game. They're making strides up. Missouri has figured out enough things where Barry Odom's probably going to keep his job, and they're probably going to get into a bowl game. Kentucky's had a historic run, and Georgia's that one dominating team – that the East has not had in a long, long time. What is the East before that? When South Carolina was winning 11 games, it wasn't really good. Okay. When Missouri won back-to-back Eastern Division championships, it wasn't really good. The East has timing is so much of things. When you look at the records and so on and so forth, timing, it can be everything. It can be the difference between you having a legacy and getting fired in 3-4 years. So I just say that to say this. The South Carolina job now is more difficult in my eyes than when it was when Steve Spurrier had it rolling there. And when Steve Spurrier had it rolling, and you know this as much as anybody, the recruiting guru that you are, there was this surplus of outstanding in-state talent that came out of there at one time. Within a 2-3 year span, it's hard to ask a state the size of South Carolina to produce again, where it's Clowney, it's Gilmore, it's Swearinger, it's Ingram. I mean, on and on.
Marcus Lattimore.
Of course, Marcus Lattimore, Alshon Jeffrey. I mean, that type of class, you know, that type of 2-year run or whatever, I don't think that's happened since. You correct me if I'm wrong. I don't think it's happened since. And South Carolina got almost all of those guys beating out Clemson. Clemson started branching out and recruiting other states. And here's this Dabo Swinney guy who most people thought was just a Band-Aid, a wide receivers coach, was just going to – it was a bridge to the next big coach they got there. They lose to their in-state rival 5 straight years. Almost any other situation, you get fired in that situation. But Clemson changes ADs. They don't fire him. They keep him around. Clemson winds up building a power. South Carolina is where it is. And that is the extra little layer, much like the Auburn football coach is going to be on the hot seat every 2 years, in part because their in-state rival has become a national power. Well, it is tough when you're a Gamecock fan and your in-state rival has become a national power, and you're languishing right now in the middle of the Eastern Division of the SEC. So that, to me, all adds up.
And I'll say this, too. There's two things about Spurrier. And look, I don't think the Gamecock fans should continue to bash the recruiting his last 4 years and the fact that they didn't really have a plan or know what they were doing, and he made some very bad staff decisions. you know, and there he had a bad staff during two or three of those 11 and twos. I'll say this. How did Fred Goldsmith do? It wasn't Fred Goldsmith. It was Barry Wilson. How did he do at Duke? He got fired quickly after Spurrier left. How did the Zucker do at Florida? Gone. And I had it. I know somebody that was on Ron Zook's staff at Florida, and when they got there, they were stunned. No recruiting board. Very little organization. You know, you take over a program like Florida from Steve Spurrier, and it's winning, and they had a really good team his last year in 2001. They just didn't quite make it. And you expect, we're taking over a juggernaut. We're just going to keep it rolling. And externally, it definitely was. There were great players there, including Rex Grossman. But internally, they had a lot to do. Because there was a lot of disorganization. And I'll use the car analogy again, and I'll compare Saban to Spurrier because it's two different styles. When you take over a program from Nick Saban, the car, it may be 10 years old, but it's in immaculate condition, and it's up to you to drive it and not screw it up. Okay, look at Les Miles. He won a national championship 3 years in thanks to the foundation Nick Saban had in place at LSU. It's pristine. Steve Spurrier may be a better driver of a car than Nick Saban, but he's going to drive the crap out of it and then toss you the keys and say, hep, hep, here you go. Here's your car.
Cracking a windshield.
I mean, you know, and so that's it. And they're also, because it was it was the best run in school history record-wise, there were also some low-hanging fruit missing. And you mentioned the SEC East. And in 2011, South Carolina was the best team in the SEC East. They won at Georgia. The Gamecocks lost an inexplicable home game to an 8-5 Auburn team that I'll never understand, 16-13. Had them beat, couldn't stop the run, that kind of thing. And then their other Western Division opponent was at Arkansas, coached by, Bobby Petrino, who they could never beat. Okay? Georgia lost to South Carolina, ends up winning out, going to the Dome, getting stomped by LSU. 2012, the Gamecocks beat Georgia 35-7 at home. But that was the first year Missouri and A&M were in the league, and the schedule got all jumbled. So the Gamecocks played fifth-ranked Georgia. They had to play at LSU, which is where dreams go to die, and then a game at Florida, coached by Will Muschamp, 3 weeks in a row. So they dropped the LSU and Florida game. Well, here comes Georgia going 7-1. They go to the Dome and are a play away from playing for the national championship. Okay? The next year, the Gamecocks also beat the SEC East champion, Missouri Tigers, 27-24. They lost at Georgia, then lost an inexcusable ball game to Butch Jones in Tennessee in their first year in Knoxville, 23-21. So there goes division title number 4 in a row. And I'll take it a step further. In 2014, the Gamecocks had a 2-touchdown lead at Kentucky, a 13-point lead over Missouri, and a 2-touchdown lead with 5 minutes to go against Tennessee. And their defense, because of the lack of recruiting and lack of vision to get a competent defensive coordinator in there, the defense blew all three of those games. Guess what? Ding, ding, ding. You win those, you hold on, you have any defense at all. South Carolina would be looking at 5 straight SEC East titles under Spurrier. Georgia, the entire time we've had an SEC championship game, has 6. So tell me the dynamics of the program wouldn't have changed. Everybody was happy about beating Clemson, and Clemson's sitting there touting accomplishments that matter, that resonate with recruits. They're building facilities. And South Carolina's just sitting there going, 5 in a row, great. Let's go to another Citrus Bowl. And now even that's been taken away. And the fan base is like, well, what happened, you know? And so that's what's unfortunate. And I'm not criticizing Steve Spurrier at all. I'm glad they have the indoor facility named after him. He absolutely revolutionized that program in more ways than just wins. You look around the stadium, Mike, it doesn't even look like it did when he got there. You know, he really facilitated an evolution at South Carolina. But the bottom line is there was some low-hanging fruit that didn't get picked. And that's kind of why they are where they are. I mean, it'd be a completely different discussion if you're talking about 5 straight trips to Atlanta, and you're leaving the deck a little more stacked for the next guy.
Yeah, we'll put a cap on this because I don't want to spend too much time on one program on this podcast. But when I was on a show a couple of years back, and I mean, the guy was just ripping Spurrier because the way he left, and I was like, I get it. Nobody likes to see a guy quote unquote quit in the middle of the season. Although, you know, I didn't see the point in him staying anyway. It was clear that it was going nowhere. Like, at least it gives you a head start on kind of making that transition to your next regime. Having a coach who's not that motivated at that point with a really bad team, having him just finish out the string so he can, what, tack on a few more career wins to his legacy. I don't know if that really helps you as a program. But, look, I mentioned on that segment to the same guy who was just ripping him to shreds. I said, look, 10 years from now, history will be very kind to Steve Spurrier. So you might want to go ahead and spew some venom out now, but you're going to look back. That is the high watermark of a program that might not get there anytime soon again. Every program has a high watermark, you know, and what happens is the fan base gets used to that, and that just assumes that's going to be the new norm. I wonder if Arkansas fans, 2010, 2011, with Bobby Petrino wins 21 games and they go to a Sugar Bowl and a Cotton Bowl, if they're thinking, yeah, this is where Arkansas football is. This is what we are. This is where we should be all the time. Well, reality comes crashing down to earth, thanks in large part to a motorcycle incident with a former volleyball player. And Arkansas they're really struggling and trying to kind of find out what their place is in the SEC West. I think South Carolina's place in the SEC East can be awfully good. I just don't think it's going to be Georgia anytime soon. I think this should have happened with Georgia a while ago. And while I like Mark Richt, and I don't think he did an awful job, he did a lot of good things, I just thought they had hit the wall with Mark Richt, and whoever was going to take that job, if it was a decent coach who could recruit and knew how to manage an elite program, they were going to get over the hump. And Georgia's clearly done that. And I would say that even if they, you know, if they lose to Alabama in the SEC championship game, they're not making it to the playoff. But it's clear. I mean, you look at what they've done in a short amount of time. Yes, he inherited a lot, but it's an engine now that's just not going to stop. Boy, how many car analogies can we make in one podcast? And I think the rest of the East is going to start pulling up. I think Jeremy Pruitt, like I said all along, I'm not sure what to make of the hire. I thought a lot of people jumped the gun and just said it's a tremendous hire. Based on what? We've seen this before. Highly touted defensive coordinators with a recruiting background take over a head coach of a major program. Does not always work. So I'm not convinced that he's the answer, but I am convinced Tennessee is going to start bouncing back. Kentucky, yeah, this might be a high water mark for them, but they're certainly going to be better than the old Kentucky days. And I think Mark Stoops has kind of cracked the code on how you can at least make Kentucky competitive. Missouri, I can't figure out, so I'm not even going to try. Vanderbilt's Vanderbilt, and they got to figure out whether or not they're going to keep Coach May. And a year in which there's hardly any hot seat talk, by the way, we might not have a single coaching change in the SEC. Think about that.
I don't think it's going to happen because Vanderbilt's played pretty doggone well down the stretch. And if they beat Tennessee for the fifth time in 7 years, and that game is in Nashville, they could end up getting to a bowl.
Which means there'll be 70% Tennessee fans at lovely Commodore Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, they had Missouri on the ropes on the road. They beat Arkansas on the road pretty handily. They've played some tough football, so I don't know that.
And they have one of the best running backs in the country, by the way.
Oh yeah,
Vanderbilt does.
That guy's really
stud.
Good.
He is transfer a stud. From Illinois.
Shoot.
Stud.
If you're Lovie Smith, you're just sick. If you're watching Vanderbilt play football right now. But I don't know that there's a justification to fire anybody at all 14 schools.
I don't think so. I think Barry Odom's going to stick. I think he's done just enough here toward the end. They're probably going to go to a bowl game now next year when they lose Drew Locke, when they lose some of those offensive linemen, when they lose a Buckner on defense. that's the year. I mean, that's the year where Missouri, he's either going to find a way to squeak out 6-7 wins and perhaps survive, or he's going to be in a lot of trouble. And the same thing with Coach Mason, extremely likable guy.
Something extraordinary has happened to Judy Sizemore's closet, making it feel more like a closet. An area that once caused claustrophobia now has enough space. To hold all of Judy's striped boatneck sweaters. And Judy Sizemore has a lot of striped boatneck sweaters. The Container Store Custom Closet Sale is here with up to 25% off all systems, including Alpha, through October 13th. The Container Store, where space comes from. Something extraordinary has happened to Judy Sizemore's closet, making it feel more like a closet. An area that once caused claustrophobia now has enough space. To hold all of Judy's striped boatneck sweaters. And Judy Sizemore has a lot of striped boatneck sweaters. The Container Store Custom Closet Sale is here with up to 25% off all systems, including Alpha, through October 13th. The Container Store, where space comes from.
And we all know the difficult challenges that Vanderbilt had. Let me go back to my original point real quick on how bad the East was. No knock on James Franklin, but Vanderbilt won 9 games 2 years in a row. Okay, Vandy won 9 games 2 years in a row. Missouri won back-to-back Eastern Division titles, and South Carolina won 11 games 3 years in a row. I don't think any of those things are happening again anytime soon. So there, I hope that doesn't upset 3 fan bases at once. I'm just trying to keep it real here. I think the way the Eastern Division is going to shape up here soon is we're going to see a little bit more 1990s SEC East, where the Big Three are all going to have something going for them at the same time, not to the level of Georgia. But I do think Florida and Tennessee will work their way up. I think South Carolina is on solid ground with Will Muschamp. And I think you mentioned the keys. He's going to break Steve Spurrier's record for the most wins in the first 3 years of that program. And in a lot of ways, he's doing it with smoke and mirrors. And you want a stat of the day on them? Here's a stat of the day on the Gamecocks. Last year when they won 9 games, and again, a lot of people figured, well, we won 9 games in 2017. We ought to win at least 9 in 2018. The turnover margin for South Carolina was plus 11. It's minus 5 this year. That is a 16 turnover turnaround. And if you follow football enough, this is what gamblers keep an eye on. You could coach it all you want. You're not going plus 11 in turnover margin back-to-back years. Some of that is just, quite frankly, luck. And eventually those things even out, and they certainly have in the case of the Gamecocks. And yet they still have a chance to win 7-8 games, continue to stockpile the recruits. And next year, even though they lose Debo, should be awfully good with Jake Bentley and company at the helm. Georgia Auburn, just real quick on that. Gus Malzahn, by the way, is definitely coming back. But you brought up a good point. A lot of people are saying, "Well, I told you all along he was going to be coaching next year." Look, those two games they won after the loss to Tennessee, don't underestimate that, because they easily, if they lose those, and they were both competitive games, it becomes tumultuous. It becomes toxic to where no matter what that buyout is, it could have gotten a little bit ugly. But yeah, he'll be back next year, and maybe Auburn, maybe they figure things out next season. Maybe that would be typical Auburn to go, 7-5, which, assuming they lose to Alabama and win this weekend, that's what they're going to be. And then next year, put up a 10-2. That's Auburn football over the last 10 years in a lot of ways. LSU beats Arkansas. Nothing to say or see there, quite frankly. Alabama blanks Mississippi State in a game which, if I'm a Mississippi State fan, I am irate over some of the calls by the officials in that game. I'm not saying it made a difference between win or lose, but holy smokes. You got a situation where James Carville goes on College Game Day and is unhinged, claiming all kinds of crazy stuff, But then you have a game like that and you almost you add fuel to the fire because you make three or four calls that clearly were in the wrong direction, all heavily favoring Alabama in a game where they didn't need that much help. So that was the thing that stood out to me in that game. Notre Dame blows out Florida State. The Seminoles look like they just don't even want to play for Willie Taggart. They just want to pack their bags, go home, and not even go out and compete. Maybe the Florida game in 2 weeks will change, you know, a little bit of that in-state stuff and swagger and trash talk and all that stuff. Maybe they'll at least play for that, even if they don't play for Willie Taggart. UCF wins again. Texas beats Texas Tech, and Northwestern is going to be in the Big Ten championship game. Congratulations to Pat Fitzgerald. 1995, Northwestern hadn't been to a bowl game since around World War II, and he takes them as a player. He leaves that team along with Gary Barnett to the Rose Bowl. They wind up losing to Keyshawn Johnson and Southern Cal. I don't know if today's youth know how bad Northwestern football used to be. Pat Fitzgerald now has them as like a national team. They're 6-1 in the Big Ten. They haven't won an out-of-conference game. That's an issue. But anyway, they're going to be in the Big Ten championship game. Congratulations to Northwestern. Congratulations to Arizona State. Herm Edwards has them having a chance to make it to the conference championship game. Congratulations to SMU. SMU is going to play in the American Championship game.
That has to give Arkansas fans some hope.
Because Chad Morris built it.
Yeah, you don't associate him with being, you know, an elite type recruiter, but you know he stocked that roster because when he took over, it was terrible.
It was terrible. Yeah, June Jones just June Jones. I actually did his last game. He quit right after he lost it. And then Pitt. How about Pitt? How about the job that Pat Narduzzi has done, former DC at Michigan State? Pitt is one of those very, very difficult jobs, never going to be what they were. Their high water mark was obviously in the 80s with Marino, Mark May. Of course, in the late 70s, they had Dorsett, Hugh Green. I mean, those days have been long, long gone. They've bounced around. They're in the ACC, which still feels a little weird. But great coaching job turned in there. I wanted to mention those stories because we talk a lot of SEC, ACC, but I wanted to get those in there.
Pat Fitzgerald's one of the best coaches in the country. I mean, this team lost at home to Akron earlier in the season. Okay, Akron, the Terry Bowden and the Zips beat them.
That's right. The fighting Buster Browns.
Duke beat them by 2 touchdowns at home, and then they lost to Notre Dame. But It's got to be special for those fans. I remember when they went to the Rose Bowl that year, Pat Fitzgerald was on that team. A lot of purple and white out there in Pasadena. And they lost, but, it still is quite quite something. They went to the Citrus Bowl the next year, too, and played the Gators.
That's right.
2-year run, but it was, it's one of those things. I think Pat Fitzgerald, Pat Narduzzi, those are guys that don't get enough credit for the job they do. I mean, even at Pitt, they lost 51-6 to Penn State earlier this year. I mean, they were kind of in the doldrums as well.
Yeah. They share a stadium with the Steelers. I mean, that's not an easy job, but he's had some success there. So hats off to him. And by the way, Iowa State won again. Matt Campbell, I wish I was Matt Campbell's agent because he's not only going to get college looks from every opening. There's not many premier openings. We'll get to that in a second. But there's some pro people that are going to be looking at him. I think Matt Campbell could very easily be the next coach of the Cleveland Browns next season. But we'll entertain those thoughts when the offseason happens, because right now he still has a job in Ames. One guy who doesn't still have a job at the place that he started at this season is Bobby Petrino. Bobby Petrino, not surprisingly, fired. They're 2-8. They're 0-7. They've clearly quit. There ought to be a 30 for 30 on Bobby Petrino. I think there will be at some point. You have to go back to really appreciate this full circle, this arc. You have to go back to his first go round at Louisville. Bobby Petrino put Louisville football on the map at a time where Louisville football was irrelevant. In 2003, they go 9-4. In 2004, they go 11-1, 8-0 in their conference. They wind up winning the Liberty Bowl. They finish the season as the number six team in the country. What is he going to do then? That was in Conference USA. What about when you go into a big conference like the Big East? 2005, they go 9-3. They go to a Gator Bowl. 2006, they win the Big East. They go 12-1. Then they go to the Orange Bowl and they win the FedEx Orange Bowl that season. I believe they defeated Wake Forest in that game, if I'm not mistaken. So at that point, he is a hot name, right? He winds up, we all know about the Atlanta Falcons debacle, and that's unfortunately where his true personality kind of really showed. I still talk about that here in Atlanta, just how what a complete horse's rear end he was. So then he goes back to Arkansas, and I thought, you know, Tom Jurich, not back to Arkansas, he gets the Arkansas job. We'll get to Tom Jurich in the second stint of it. Goes to Arkansas. Arkansas, you know, I mean, they just kind of up and down, middle of the pack in the West, never good enough to really compete. First 2 years, ho-hum, 5-7, 8-5. 2010, 10-3. They finished second in the West. They go to a Sugar Bowl. 2011, 11-2. They go to a Cotton Bowl. That's 21 wins in his last 2 years at Arkansas. Again, I don't know if that's going to be done again in our lifetime. Not as long as the divisions are set up the way they are. So he's a hot name and then, of course, decides to get on a bike and various activities reportedly happening on that bike with a former volleyball player. We all remember the press conference, which is a great Halloween costume, Bobby Petrino in a neck brace with bruises all over him and trying to explain how that happened.
Just real quick, do you think he was listening to Bob Seger's Roll Me Away while he was on the bike?
I think that's very probable, yes. I think that's – we can't confirm nor deny, but I think that's very probable.
Super pimp. Okay, continue.
Yes. So then he gets fired, needs a reclamation job, goes to Western Kentucky for 1 year, leads the Hilltoppers to an 8-4 record. And then Tom Jurich, who – look, I admire Tom Jurich in that. He knew what he had. Louisville is a job where you got to make some noise. You got to take some chances. So he brings them to Louisville. 9-4, 8-5, 9-4. Now, granted, he's got a really good quarterback, really good quarterback by the name of Lamar Jackson for a couple of those years, but still, 9-4, 8-5, 9-4, 8-5, bowl, and then finally it is bottomed out this year. And I think now you close the book on Bobby Petrino because the image is still tarnished. The record is, I just think his light has burnt out, and I think his day and age of getting another Power 5 type job is over. And go ahead and pony up $5 million, whatever you can, in those horse money coffers over there in the Commonwealth and get Jeff Brohm away from Purdue, and you can just close one chapter, which ended very badly, and begin a new one, which could be very bright and optimistic going forward.
Yeah, Jeff Brohm's the guy, obviously. That would be the second time he's taken Petrino's place because he replaced him at Western Kentucky as well, which is weird.
That's right.
Two takes on Bobby Petrino, and I made this on the POS show as well. My mom always said, if you're going to be a butthole, you better be really good at your job because the minute you're not good at your job, you're getting fired. You're never getting the benefit of the doubt, and I'm not saying Bobby Petrino is a butthole, which that's kind of worse than calling somebody an a-hole if you really think about it. You know, like butthole. I mean, how many times do you hear people say that? Butthole. You're a butthole.
I think Beavis and Butthead used it a lot.
Beavis. So that's that. Number two, I think that when you look around college football, guys that have good success that go back to other jobs, and I thought Petrino may be the exception, but they go back to where they started or go back to the job they used to have. Rarely does it work out. Rarely does it not end like this. Johnny Majors at Pitt comes to mind. John Robinson at Southern Cal comes to mind. And we talked about Steve Spurrier a lot earlier when he took the South Carolina job. He talked to Holtz, and he mentioned it in his press conference. He's like, I asked Coach Holtz if he ever thought about going back to Notre Dame. He said, heck no, you don't do that. And you just don't. It never ends well the second time around. because you've created a level of expectation, and then when you don't meet it, the excitement of you being back kind of gets into the same old thing, and you know it just collapsed. And I think Kentucky doing so well this year doesn't help. I think other teams in the Atlantic Division, like Boston College and Syracuse, sort of rising, doesn't help. I think Clemson and their dominance doesn't help. And so, you know, all those things added up to him needing to be gone. And, you know, he would have maybe gotten the – if it were Charlie Strong, maybe he gets the benefit of the doubt and doesn't get fired. And I do think Jeff Brohm's success at Purdue, particularly that win over Ohio State, because if you look at it, Purdue's been really up and down this year. But that win over Ohio State and the fact that Petrino tanked this year – has to have that fan base, which does get out and support football, going, hey, let's bring our boy back and let's rid ourselves of this guy once and for all and all that. Now, I think he ends up being a coordinator on offense because I think he can still call plays either in the NFL or maybe at the major college level, or maybe he's one of Nick Saban's analysts next year.
Yeah, Nick does have quite a – kind of a dog pile of fired SEC coaches in that analyst role, which the NCAA hasn't really figured out what to do with that. It almost seems like you're kind of circumventing some things. But I think the NFL would be the right spot for him. I think he could certainly get an NFL job if he wants one. I'm sure he's got a lot of money tucked away in the bank. But the NFL is willing to overlook the fact that you're not necessarily a great human being more so than the college game is. And I just think his luck has run out in the college game. I go back to 2 years ago when Lamar Jackson won the Heisman, and he shouldn't, and wiser people like myself voted for Deshaun Watson. That game at home, they play a very mediocre Kentucky team, and they lose. Lamar was terrible in that game, and I don't think Louisville was ever the same since. I don't think Louisville was ever the same after they lost that game. Louisville was a heavy favorite in that game and should have won the game at home with the, again, the guy who eventually won the Heisman. But that to me was, if I look back at a signature moment of where it went wrong, that was certainly one of them. And they can't defend anybody. It's bad there. Brohm to me is, it's just like Scott Frost at Nebraska. This hire makes too much sense not to make it. And again, if this was like last year where you had all these marquee openings, you might have to really get into a bidding war with a program that has a lot more cachet than yours does. But maybe Clay Helton gets fired at Southern Cal. Maybe not. There's just not a lot of openings this year. It's been a very quiet market, and I don't anticipate that changing in the final couple of weeks. I don't think we're going to see you got the talk of McIntyre, Colorado, but that Colorado's that's another job. That is not what it used to be.
And he actually did a really good job there.
I thought he did too. I couldn't believe they fired him.
They've tanked this year. They were in the top 15, and then they've lost however many in a row, including losing to Oregon State at home, which is never good. But, I mean, they've won a division title and played for a Pac-12 championship. And if you think about Colorado, you know, some programs that are really good go in the wilderness. Some go in the abyss. Colorado was in the abyss, and then they changed conferences. I know the standards are high there, but I think he probably deserves one more year. But who knows? Who knows what they're thinking, and who knows who they think they can get?
Yeah, and I should point out, I mean, there are reports that he's fired.
Yeah.
In fact, as I understand it, JC 24/7 Sports is reporting he has been fired. Don't know for certain. There hasn't been a press conference or anything. But it certainly doesn't look great over there. And I've been there. It's a beautiful school, beautiful campus. Still does not feel like a Pac-12 deal. One of those when we had realignment that I don't know if that's a great fit for them or not. But some of those schools had to migrate with the threat of the Big 12 collapsing during that time frame. In terms of what to look forward to this weekend, like I said, hopefully the rain will stop and the weather will be nice and you can enjoy your team beating up on an inferior opponent. That'll be the case for many SEC fan bases. What else are you looking forward to?
Well, just kind of maybe seeing the I don't know. I mean, it's the SEC. I think Missouri-Tennessee is an intriguing game. Congratulations to the Vols for beating Kentucky, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Kentucky's offense has gone in the pooper. But Tennessee played inspired football. I think, you know, this is a game Tennessee can definitely win. I think Missouri's offense obviously is at a different level than Kentucky's is at this point. You know, and if they get this one, you know, you're bowl eligible, and you don't have to beat Vandy to go to a bowl. So I think that's interesting. You know, Mississippi State and Arkansas, time is running out on Chad Morris to get one SEC win this year. I don't know that they're going to do it. I think Mississippi State has an awfully good defense, and Arkansas has played a lot better on defense, kind of at times. John Chavis kind of doing it with smoke and mirrors out there, but I think they're going to be too much. Other than that, you know, UAB is 9-1, and that's a team we didn't mention when we were congratulating.
Good point.
People. They didn't have a football team. They yes. stopped football for a couple of years, but Bill Clark, who I think is one of the most underrated coaches in America,
agreed.
And those UAB fans, you know, the ones they have, really rallied, and now they're 9-1. 9-1.
Yeah.
And they go to Texas A&M. Who I think Texas A&M needs a win, you know, because they've dropped some tough ones. So that's slightly intriguing. I know you have Chattanooga and South Carolina. I think, you know, South Carolina has just come off 8 straight SEC games. They're the only team in the country to have only played one non-conference game this year, and that was in the opener. So it's a chance to kind of get some things right before you got to go up and face a tremendous challenge in Clemson. And it's a night game at Williams-Brice, so that's going to be one I watch. You know, I don't think there's going to be a lot of great mystery there. You know, around the country, there's not that much intrigue. Duke at Clemson, I think this is a situation where you're just kind of wondering when to call. It's like a fight. You know, when do I call the game? You know, so not all that good. You know, TCU needs to beat Baylor to get to a bowl. Ohio State plays at Maryland. While I think this is dangerous to a certain extent, because Ohio State, I think Ohio State got well last week, even though it was an ugly win at Michigan State. You know, the ACC Coastal is going to kind of come into picture. You know, here's one that I like. Okay, and I don't know that they're the 12th best team in the country. Syracuse at Notre Dame. I think that may be the game of the week.
I think that's the marquee game.
Yeah, I think that's the game of the week. I mean,
that's at Yankee Stadium, by the way.
At Yankee. Oh, I'm sorry. Syracuse versus Notre Dame at Yankee Stadium. Love that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, over the years, Syracuse has played Notre Dame pretty tough. I know a game in East Rutherford a couple of years ago, Baber's first year. Notre Dame wasn't very good, but they struggled. So, you know, maybe they get a game. I mean, it's good to see Q's back. They were in the abyss, but this is a program where Donovan McNabb and Jim Brown played. So, you know, they're not without history and tradition.
Marvin Harrison.
Yeah, and if all those openings we had last year were this year, Dino Babers would be a guy that a lot of folks, I think, would try to go after. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that's my take. You know, looking forward to those games this weekend. It'll be kind of quiet because then the next weekend we got all the rivalries and certainly should be fun.
And on, you know, on the note of that game, Syracuse and Notre Dame, it's really the last chance. I don't want to say, I mean, Southern Cal could beat Notre Dame conceivably. They have athletes. Okay. This probably is the best chance for Notre Dame to lose a game, which every Power Five conference is pulling for, because Notre Dame is going to deprive. It's simple math. You can't fit 5 into 4. And then if Notre Dame takes one of those slots as an independent, you can't fit 5 into 3. So if Notre Dame's in the playoff, that means 2 of the Power Five conferences are left watching the playoff at home. If you want to see that playoff expanded quickly, this is the best thing to happen, is to have Notre Dame get in, you know, every year, quite frankly, because if one Power Five conference gets left at home, they're going to cry and moan, and they'll be stating their case and okay, fine. If two of them are left out, nah, that's a bigger deal. That's a bigger matzo ball right there. So, but if Notre Dame goes undefeated again, this is the playoff show. I think when it first started, it was an hour long. Then this year, it's a half hour. You could do it in 5 minutes. Okay. There's about seven teams that have a realistic chance of even competing in it. And the scenarios are real simple. We don't have a lot of opportunities for controversy unless Georgia beats Alabama in Atlanta. That's where does Michigan fit? What about the head-to-head Michigan-Notre Dame? That's where things could get a little bit screwy. Outside of that, you and I could – I mean, heck, I could go to the local nursing home and find two ladies that are playing bridge and have them select the top four teams in college football this year. They're not. I mean, it's not going to take a lot of science, okay? It's just or wherewithal or expertise or anything else. It really isn't. So that's where we are. I tell you where we are. If you want good clothing, go to bpskinnerclothiers.com. Brent Skinner and the gang do an outstanding job, and they come to you. You don't come to them. No need to go over to a showroom and no, you don't need to do that in today's day and age. They come out to you. Brent does. I've had him do it over here in Atlanta. And he'll fit you for everything. He'll show you all the different options that you have, whether it's a tailor-made suit, custom-made shirts, ties, accessories, you name it. He's got it. He's at the right price, and he's a great guy to deal with. BPSkinnerClothiers.com is your answer. JC, some final thoughts.
Yeah, just ready to kind of get to the next weekend after this one, but Thanksgiving and all that. But, certainly – I think at this point, the 3 and 4 spots in the playoffs are going to be decided, and we can continue to talk about big picture. I mean, it's a little different than last year when the coaching carousel was already spinning, but, I sort of knew last season, after all those changes, we were going to have a quiet 2018 in that regard. So looking forward to checking out the action this weekend, seeing if it changes anything, and then heading into Thanksgiving and rivalry week.
Something extraordinary has happened to Judy Sizemore's closet, making it feel more like a closet.
Closet.
An area that once caused claustrophobia now has enough space. To hold all of Judy's striped boat neck sweaters. And Judy Sizemore has a lot of striped. Boat neck sweaters. The Container Store Custom Closet Sale is here with up to 25% off all systems, including Alpha, through October 13th. The Container Store, where space comes from.
Jess, it's happening.
Whoa, Tina, what are you doing in my car?
Space is here now. No closet will be left behind.
Did you say closet?
Yes, the Container Store custom closets are up to 25% off. It doesn't matter the size or shape. Space is coming to them all.
You're not serious.
Space isn't a joke, Jess.
How long do we have?
Through October 13th.
All right, buckle up.
The Container Store custom closet sale is here with up to 25% off all systems, including Alpha. The Container Store, where space comes from.